from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us as we take you beyond the headlines to hear directly from our nation's leaders and newsmakers as we pursue the truth on the issues that matter most to you and your family, all from a biblical worldview. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, and Washington Watch starts now.
Israel has facilitated the entry of 500,000 tons of humanitarian aid into Gaza, including almost 20,000 trucks of food, while Hamas has been bombing humanitarian crossings, damaging water pipes, and stealing aid from the people of Gaza.
That was IDF spokesman Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari earlier today. Now, the United Nations announced that it was halting food distribution into Gaza, citing a lack of supplies and insecurity. But is that really the case? Could it be that the humanitarian crisis is the creation intentionally of Hamas? We're going to talk with Carolyn Glick, senior contributing editor of Jewish News Syndicate. And next Monday, the 77th World Health Assembly begins their meeting in Geneva, Switzerland. And that is when the WHO will make their global grab for power.
You plan to submit the treaty to the Senate so that it can fulfill its constitutional obligations?
We will fully consult with Congress as appropriate on anything that we do.
But consult with Congress is not necessarily sending to the Senate to fulfill their constitutional, for their approval.
If there is a constitutional requirement, we will fulfill it.
That was Congressman Mario Diaz-Balart questioning Secretary of State Antony Blinken before a House Appropriations Committee on the administration's support for the treaty and whether or not it would be submitted to the U.S. Senate for ratification. FRC's Travis Weber, who will be in Geneva next week for the Hugh meeting, will join me a little bit later. And the Senate this afternoon rejected a so-called border security bill.
Just like 3 months ago, Senate Republicans rejected the strongest and most comprehensive bipartisan border security bill Congress has seen in a whole generation. It's a sad day for the Senate, a sad day for America.
The Senate this afternoon, as I said, rejected this bill. The Senate was the Senate scare leader Chuck Schumer about an hour ago. Why? Why did the Senate reject the bill? Well, we're actually going to talk with Texas Senator John Cornyn in just a few moments. The website, TonyPerkins.com, lots of resources there for you. Be sure and check it out. All right, among the charges, the International Criminal Court lists in its arrest warrant for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is the claim that Israel is, quote, causing starvation as a method of war, including the denial of humanitarian relief supplies, end quote. Now, this claim comes despite documented proof that Hamas terrorists continue to both hoard food and steal from Gazan civilians. The same lack of concern for civilian lives that Hamas demonstrated by embedding their fighters with the general population applies to their repeated looting of U.S.-supplied humanitarian aid. But is this being ignored by those who are anti-Israel because it doesn't fit their narrative? Joining me now to discuss this and more is Carolyn Glick. She is a senior contributing editor at the Jewish News Syndicate and host of the Carolyn Glick Show on JNS. Carolyn, welcome back to Washington Watch.
It's always my pleasure to be with you, Tony. Thanks for having me.
So Israel is waging a war to defeat Hamas, not kill Gazan civilians. They've made that very clear. Yet the world wants to make excuses for Hamas terrorists who are using civilians as human shields. And now there appears to be evidence to suggest that they are raiding food supplies meant for civilians, keeping it from the very individuals that the world's providing it for.
Right. This shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. I mean, Hamas controls civilian operations in Gaza largely because the United States has made it very clear to Israel that it doesn't want Israel to control them, including the distribution of food. As a result, we had reports last week that Hamas has actually earned $500 million since the beginning of the war by selling the humanitarian aid that the international community insists that Israel be bringing into Gaza. So this entire thing is a way, it's humanitarian relief for Hamas. Hamas is receiving all of the aid because they purloin everything. I mean, the United States spent $320 million to build a pier in Gaza to deliver humanitarian aid by sea, and none of the hundreds and hundreds of tons of humanitarian aid that has been brought to that pier has been delivered to anybody in Gaza. One truckload was commandeered, one convoy was commandeered by Hamas and just seized, and every other convoy comes under attack. So it's all this pathetic lie, and basically it's all geared towards exactly what we're seeing from the International Criminal Court, which is that the claims of starvation, which are untrue, the claims of deliberate starvation, which are untrue, the claims of famine, which are untrue, the claim that Israel deliberately targets civilians for killing, which is untrue. All of these things are geared towards one goal, and that goal is for Israel to be forced to capitulate to international pressure and allow Hamas to survive. These are all demands that are being made, all allegations utterly false that are being waged against Israel because the people who are waging them want Israel to lose this war.
So according to documents that I've seen, there has been over 300,000 tons of food and beverages that have been delivered to Gaza, averaging about 200 truckloads a day that these are coming from Israel. Israel's allowing in. So why is there this humanitarian crisis if the relief supplies are going in? There's only one explanation. It's not getting to the people, and it's not the Israelis keeping it from them.
Right, and I don't know how terrible a humanitarian crisis there is at all, because, aside from the canned photographs that you see all of these pro-Hamas activists putting up on their Twitter feed and everything else, there hasn't been any documented evidence that anybody is starving in Gaza except for the 128 hostages from Israel that Hamas kidnapped to Gaza on October 7th. So those are the only people we know for certain are starving. Most of the terrorists that Israel has arrested during the course of the war have been fat to obese. So we're not seeing any privation in terms of food shortages among the members of Hamas that we're seeing. And we don't really see it among civilians. They just celebrated the month of Ramadan, their holiday or holy month. And there were no reported shortages of food for Ramadan. So all of this is just, it's just a fabrication, and it's used in order to foment an Israeli defeat in this war. That's what it's all about.
So this kind of all fits together as a narrative that's needed by the International Criminal Court and the international community to put pressure on Israel to keep them from executing the finality of this war and eliminating Hamas. It seems like if we really wanted to, the international community, that is, wanted to eliminate the threat to the civilian population, let them get back to life as normal, if there's such a thing, is to allow Israel to eradicate Hamas, who is actually the one who is affecting these people.
You know, Tony, you're absolutely right. And starting from the very early stages of the war, I'm talking about October 9th, 10th, it was obvious that the best way to win the war was to seize control of the international border with Egypt and allow civilians who were checked to leave Gaza. And then that would prevent any claims of humanitarian crisis, just as millions of people have left war zones all over the world since the dawn of time. And most recently in Ukraine, where the United States actually came in and pressured third countries to take refugees from Ukraine and from Syria, of course, before that in Afghanistan and Iraq and other places, Libya.
Right.
Here, the United States sided with the Egyptians when they said that not one Gazan would be allowed to seek refuge in Egypt, even though they have plentiful space in the Sinai Peninsula to house everybody temporarily and let them come home at the end of the war. There would have been no humanitarian crisis whatsoever. So that was from the very outset. And then the United States was saying Israel has to provide food and water while we're in the middle of fighting to everybody in Gaza. And any civilian who is killed in Gaza is Israel's fault, even though they're being used by Hamas as civilians as human shields. And Hamas wants to increase as much as possible the number of dead Palestinians because that raises international pressure against Israel. So it's all this nefarious mix that together Hamas, Egypt, the United States, Europe, the UN, the International Criminal Court all leads to this idea that there's something criminal about Israel defending itself from the people who committed unspeakable atrocities on October 7th. And, you know, they started the war, they invaded, they massacred 1,200 people in the most sadistic way known to humanity, in ways that nobody ever imagined before. And here we are, immediately thereafter, as Senator Cruz said to Secretary Blinken today on the Senate, I mean, this week at the Senate, he said, "You tweeted on October 8th that Israel was supposed to not respond with violence to what happened." And the State Department put out a similar tweet on October 7th itself, so that the American position has been all along that Israel is not supposed to have the right to self-defense. We're not allowed to have the right to win this war. The humanitarian aid crisis is created at the outset of the war, almost immediately as Hamas was attacking Israel, that we were being attacked and told that we had to fight the war in accordance with the laws of war, as if we ever do anything differently than that. And that, you know, we were being gaslighted by the Biden administration from the outset. And talk of humanitarian crisis started a week after October 7th, when there was plentiful food and water inside of Gaza. So this is a deliberate fabrication to criminalize Israel and deny us the right to self-defense, much less the right to defeat our enemies. It's very, very extraordinary. And now we've reached the point where you have a prosecutor who has no jurisdiction over Israel. We are not a signatory to the Rome Treaty. He has no jurisdiction over the state of Israel. And now he wants to issue an arrest warrants against our prime minister, our democratically elected prime minister, and our defense minister for fighting, for leading the country in a war for our national survival. And they may find themselves, the Germans said that they would execute an arrest warrant against the prime minister of Israel if it's issued. It's extraordinary. The Germans want to arrest the leader of the Jewish state for defending Israel against modern-day Nazis. That's an unbelievable statement, and yet here we are.
Carolyn, you laid out a lot there. There's multiple exhibits here, I think, that's leading to the question why. And I want to ask that question, but we're up against a break. Can you stick around here? And because I want to, you brought up the point about the refugees and that the United States is not putting any pressure on Egypt, which is a recipient of a lot of foreign aid from the United States, the most likely place for them to go. They do it, as you pointed out, in other situations, but they've not done it here. Question is why? What's the ultimate goal here of the Biden administration? We're gonna answer that question, or at least attempt to, on the other side of this break. Folks, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Carolyn Glick, my guest in this segment. She's going to stick around with me. We're going to unpack the why. Why is all this happening? Why is the Biden administration tying the hands of the Israeli government? Why are they facilitating this narrative that would make Hamas almost seem like a victim here? We're going to continue this conversation on the other side of the break. Don't go away. I'll be right back.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us on this Thursday. The website, tonyperkins.com. My guest, Carolyn Glick. She's senior contributing editor at the Jewish News Syndicate and host of the Carolyn Glick Show on JNS. Carolyn, thanks so much for sticking around. So, the United States treating this much differently than they have other situations, as you pointed out, Ukraine, Afghanistan, and here Israel is supposed to be an ally. You think we would actually work extra hard to make it easier for Israel, but it looks like we're working extra hard to make it difficult for Israel. So why is this about being able to fulfill the long time desire of the left for this two-state solution in Israel to force this upon them? What's the end game here?
Yes, I think that you're right. Look, I mean, the Biden administration is unflappable in the sense that even the greatest atrocity that mankind has seen since World War II, what was perpetrated against the Jews of Israel on October 7th, doesn't move them one millimeter from their conviction that the biggest problem is that there's no state of Palestine for the very people who conducted these atrocities. Don't forget, 85% of the Palestinians, not only in Gaza, but in Judea and Samaria as well, support what happened on October 7th. Over 90% of Palestinians said that they are more proud to be Palestinians today than they ever were before October 7th. So these are the people that the White House thinks need to have a sovereign state. And not only do they need it in Gaza, they need it in areas that Israel, that are the biblical heartland of the Jewish people, of the Jewish state, Judea and Samaria, are from, and where the Bible took. And they want to give that land and Jerusalem, our eternal capital, to the same people who burned our babies alive on October 7th and raped our women and kidnapped them.
I showed this yesterday, but for our viewers, I want to put this map up. If we can pull up the map of Israel. Now, I want you to see this, and if you can't see it, if you're listening, you can text MAPS, M-A-P-S, to 67742 and have a link to actually look at this. This shows you how this is, it's crazy, all right? If you look at the green, the light green, that is the so-called West Bank. That's what is the heart of, that's Judea and Samaria, the heart of the Bible land, as Carolyn was talking about. That would be a part of the Palestinian state along with Gaza. Now, if you look to your, if you're looking at this map, you'll see down kind of midway on the left, a little strip. That's the Gaza Strip. Now, look at it in comparison to size to the West Bank. Now, can you imagine the trouble that's been created from the, for Israel on the Gaza Strip if you had the entire so-called West Bank filled with the same mindset? How does Israel survive in such a situation? Carolyn, I think it would lead to the destruction of the country.
Yes, it will. I mean, you know, we talk about the existential threat that Iran's nuclear weapons pose to Israel, and they do. But this is also an existential threat, because as you showed, that's the entire center of the country. That's not a little strip of land and where they which they used to kill 1,200 people and kidnap 250 back to Gaza. And they took over full villages. The reason that they didn't hold them was because they were too busy raping our women and killing our babies than to seize the territory in a significant way. So this is who we're dealing with, and the people on in Judea and Samaria share their goal of annihilating Israel. They think that what happened on October 7th is fabulous.
Right, unbelievable that the United States, regardless of political party, would be supportive of this, given the longstanding history that the United States has had with Israel and the strategic role that Israel plays in the Middle East. Carolyn, I know you've got to go. I want to thank you for sticking around for a second segment. It's always great to see you. So much, appreciate so much your insight and input.
Thank you so much for having me, Tony, and God bless you and all of your audience.
Thank you. Carolyn Glick. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. So this is, I talk about this a lot. We look at it from a political, geopolitical. We look at it from a military standpoint. Israel, very significant as a stabilizing force in the Middle East. Only democracy over there. Great ally. Israel working with the United States has been that stabilizing force. So that's clearly one thing that would be gone. But I want to. There's a spiritual side to this, and it's inexplicable to see why this administration would be pushing Israel away from us, pushing toward this two-state solution that would lead to the destruction of Israel. There's just absolutely no way the country could survive. And what we've seen with Hamas and Gaza should be Exhibit A in why this is an unworkable solution. Since 2007, Hamas has had control over Gaza. They were the elected government. And what have they done? They have been building since 2007 this elaborate terrorist structure in this small part of the land of Israel. Now, can you imagine if they had what is called the West Bank, that massive heart of Israel, to do the same? So what do we do? Well, number one, we need to educate folks. That's why I want you to text MAPS to 67742 and get a link and share that with your friends. Let them see how this is unworkable. It's an unworkable solution. That we need to pray. We need to pray for the peace of Israel. And that's for all people, because everyone benefits when that area is at peace. Now, I know peace is not going to come anytime soon from a standpoint of until the Prince of Peace comes, but we can have a managed peace there. And one of the ways that happens is when America stands strong with Israel. And that means we need to vote. We need to vote for those who will stand with Israel and not against it. And folks, you know, God says that land is theirs. He's been adding to it. We don't want to take away from it. All right, when we come back, this coming week, in fact, on Monday, the World Health Assembly meets in Geneva, Switzerland, to consider a new global pandemic treaty, which would give the WHO tremendous power. Travis Weber joins me after the break to talk about that. Don't go away.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
Welcome back to Washington Watch, website TonyPerkins.com. And again, if you'd like to get a link to see those maps that I made reference to earlier, just text MAPS, M-A-P-S, to 67742. All right, the 77th World Health Assembly will meet in Geneva, Switzerland, beginning next Monday to consider amendments to the international health regulations and a new pandemic treaty, both of which will substantially expand the United Nations organization's power, that is the World Health Organization. Join me now to discuss this, Travis Weber, Vice President for Policy and Government Affairs here at the Family Research Council, who will actually be traveling to Geneva to be there next week to observe and report from the World Health Assembly. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
So it looks like, based upon some comments, that there's some difficulty getting this across the line. So it looks like the awareness, the agitation, if you will, that we and others have created may be derailing their plan to get this thing through and grab that power next week.
Certainly, there have been a number of issues raised, and there appears to be some log jams with regard to agreement on these issues, and it's understandable. It's understandable that sovereign nations do not want to automatically give up their right to control their own intellectual property, their own productivity, economic output, and sovereignty, ability to determine the course of action for their nations, and be it at that, at the hands of the WHO. And so it's common sense that we would see what we're seeing. UK Telegraph, op-ed pages of the Telegraph, other outlets putting out opinion pieces by people saying, look, we're not so sure our nation should go ahead. Even Secretary Blinken himself admitting before Congress in the past few days that we don't really know that there's agreement right now on this this pandemic.
But they're
agreement.
Pushing for it, but they're trying to get a consensus. The Biden administration appears to be all in. But just this week, 24 governors writing to the president saying, don't sign on to this, because the governors appear to be more concerned about their sovereignty than Joe Biden seems to be concerned about the sovereignty of the U.S.
The governors have a very important claim that they make in that letter. As a constitutional matter, under our nation's constitution, we hear a lot, you know, Tony, we hear a lot in the press and in the culture right now about democracy, protecting democracy. Well, if we're going to look at that, the Constitution leaves health care to the states, does not put it in the hands of the federal government, certainly does not put it in the hands of the federal government to be automatically put in the hands of an international body like the WHO. So these are things that have to be considered. And in no way should there be agreement on all these things, on all these matters between the nations of the world less than a week from now when they convene in Switzerland. In no way is there agreement right now. So nations should not be rushing into this. This needs to be delayed and considered before there's agreement to it.
So it's wide ranging in terms of its impact. I mean, you mentioned not just the healthcare issue. You know, this could lead to masking, shutdowns, vaccinations, but you mentioned intellectual property. There's also the concern over the suppression of free speech because signatories to this, the parties would be required to clamp down on what they call misinformation. So this is a far-reaching document. It also does not define what an emergency is, so that the World Health Organization, under what we've seen thus far, would have a lot of latitude in terms of what they could declare an emergency, a crisis, and then exercise their authority.
That's right. And for, you know, viewers and listeners who might be asking, well, what is it you're actually talking about? We're talking about a proposed agreement which nations would agree with and bind themselves together internationally to deal with purportedly the problems that have arisen since the last pandemic. So it's understandable people look and say, let's try to prevent things that we did not want to happen. You have Tedros Ghebreyesus, the president, the head of the WHO, and today with an op-ed in the USA Today, making this appeal, can't we fix these issues? But on the backs of that desire comes a binding agreement, which will bind our sovereign nation and others to all sorts of areas which we should not be agreed to. Tony, you mentioned some of them. These are all areas of concern, giving away intellectual property, economic rights, sovereignty, binding ourselves to being required to clamp down on free speech, all areas we need to look at.
And blurring the line between humans and the climate and others with one health.
The concept of one health is mentioned. What is it? Do people even know what it is? Is there a common understanding? Rightly, we're concerned about what's the worldview guiding these things. So, Tony, this is important that people understand FRC is going to Geneva to help bring a Christian perspective to this and help Christians think through this.
Well, I also think it is a precursor to one world government, because even though the UN's been there, they've never had this type of enforcement authority and power of regulation over member states.
And the key to that is looking at what happened with COVID. We can think back to 9/11. You see what happened in our own government after 9/11. Public crises are always opportunities for good or for ill. Right. And we're concerned about the ill.
And you're going to be there next week. You're going to be giving updates from Geneva. So, folks, if you want to stay abreast of what's happening, not only tune in, Travis will be joining me each day here on Washington Watch, but you'll also be doing updates from Geneva. Simply text WHO to 67742, and you'll get on the list to get those updates. Again, that's WHO to 67742. So, Travis, what are your plans? We've got about 30 seconds here. When you get on the ground there in Geneva.
Yeah, so we're going to just get a sense of what's happening overall. Certainly the proceedings of the World Health Assembly. But, Tony, there's going to be a lot of people there and interested parties, nation states, NGOs. We just want to help people understand and think through and pray through all this.
There'll also be prayer warriors on the ground there, too.
We're going to be praying about it.
Yeah, so there's going to be a lot of folks there on the ground. Not only observing, but praying as well. Travis Weber, we look forward to having you on next week from Geneva.
Thank you.
And folks, I do hope you'll tune in and be a part of that next week as well and be praying for Travis and others who will be traveling to Geneva. All right, don't go away. On the other side of the break, John Cornyn, Senator John Cornyn of Texas, joins me to talk about the faux border bill that was in the Senate today. Don't go away.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Also, to get a link to this maps that we were talking about earlier, which really is instructive, text MAPS, M-A-P-S, to 67742. And you can see what we're talking about when we're talking about this two-state solution. Very, very insightful when you actually look at the maps. All right, our word for today comes from 1 Samuel chapter 21. Then David arose and fled that day from before Saul and went to Achish, the king of Gath. And the servants of Achish said to him, "Is this not David, the king of the land? Did they not sing of him to one another in dances, saying, 'Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s?' Now David took these words to heart and was very much afraid. So he changed his behavior before them, pretended madness in their hands, scratched on the doors of the gate, and let his saliva fall down on his beard. Well, apparently gripped with fear, David ran from Saul and went to the hometown of Goliath, the giant he had killed carrying the giant sword, seeking protection from Achish. And not a good idea. You know, fear leads us to take matters into our own hands, making bad decisions that only leads to greater fear. As David later wrote, he learned a lesson. He said, "It is better to trust in the Lord than put confidence in man." To find out more about our two-year journey through the Bible, text Bible to 67742. Well, this afternoon, Senate Democrats launched another effort to shield the Biden administration from blame for its disastrous border policies, bringing back to the floor of the Senate similar border legislation to a bill that failed in February, once again lacking the votes to advance it. Now, that was the same thing that occurred last time. They were unable to advance this bill. Chuck Schumer failed once again to provide the cover the Biden administration is looking for on this issue that is increasingly becoming a top issue for voters. Joining me now to discuss this is U.S. Senator John Cornyn from the state of Texas. He serves on the Senate Judiciary Committee, the Senate Finance Committee, and the Select Committee on Intelligence. Senator Cornyn, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always good to see you.
Great to be with you, Tony.
So this afternoon, was this a show vote by the Democrats?
Absolutely. It was a non-serious effort to try to get some political cover for all the reasons you mentioned. The Biden administration and Democrats have done nothing while millions of migrants have made their way across the border and moved across the country. And the drugs that killed 108,000 Americans came across right after that, making these criminal cartels wealthier by the day. And then there's the 400,000 children, the unaccompanied minors, that were placed with sponsors that the administration simply lost track of. So this is a huge political liability, as in addition to being a humanitarian and public safety crisis. And they were looking for some kind of political cover. But the American people are smart, and they're not going to be fooled by this sort of show vote today.
Senator Cornyn, I want to play a clip of the Senate scare leader, Chuck Schumer, and what he had to say earlier today about this bill. Clip number one, please.
3 months ago, something truly stunning happened here on the Senate floor. Senate Republicans filibustered the strongest, most comprehensive border security bill Congress has seen in a generation. And they did it because Donald Trump wanted to exploit the border for political gain on the campaign trail. Well, today we're going to try again.
Your response, Senator?
Well, that's not true. That's my first response. But, Tony, what kind of confidence can we have that President Biden would actually enforce any law we might pass? He hasn't enforced existing laws, which are basically the same as were in effect when President Trump was in office, with much different results. We had much better control of the border back when President Trump was president of the United States, because that's the job of the executive, which is to enforce the laws. Congress can pass laws, yes, but if the administration's unwilling to enforce them, that's, I think, the reason why there wasn't a lot of enthusiasm for this particular piece of legislation.
Yeah, as I understand the bill, and I've looked at it, and I think this is identical to the previous bill that was advanced. This really isn't a border security bill; it's an immigration enhancement bill, is it not?
Yeah, the part of the problem is it basically would make it possible for as many as 5,000 migrants a day to make it across the border before there would be a surge of resources to deal with the overage or the higher numbers that we've seen, as high as 13,000 a day at one point. But the concern was that this is not so much a desire to secure the border now as to tie the hands of the next president. I think our Democratic colleagues realized increasingly it looks like President Trump will be president, and they'd like to try to find some way to handcuff him with the current policies that would be part of this bill.
Right.
So that was another problem with this particular legislation. It really would make it harder for President Trump to clean up the mess next year.
So, Senator Cornyn, I mean, the narrative of the Democrats is that the Republicans rejected this legislation at the behest of former President Trump in order to campaign on the board, the Biden administration's disastrous border policies. But, I mean, as you just pointed out, the president has the authority, just as President Trump had the authority, to address the border situation. I was there on the border a few times during the Trump administration, the last time being after he put in place the Remain in Mexico policy. And it was like a ghost town. There was nobody at the border.
It's much different today. Well, basically, the Biden administration has done nothing but welcome migrants and then releasing them into the interior of the United States, some claiming asylum and waiting perhaps as many as 10 years before they would ultimately go before an immigration judge. But many of them were paroled, which is a unique meaning here. But basically what that means is that they're released, even when they are not claiming asylum, as a way to manage the bottlenecks at the border. So this bill was more of a management of this humanitarian and public safety crisis to try to move people into the interior of the country. But as we've seen with Governor Abbott, among others, transporting some of these migrants to the sanctuary cities of Washington, D.C. and New York and Chicago, Other places are starting to feel the consequences of this problem, as well as the drugs that are taking the lives of young people all across the country, with fentanyl poisoning alone being the leading cause of death of young people between the age of 18 and 45.
Would it be accurate to say, Senator Cornyn, that if the Senate, under the leadership of Chuck Schumer, were serious about addressing the border, that they would simply have a vote on H.R. 2, which passed the House last year?
Absolutely. That would be the first step. And because, as you might imagine, the House wants the Senate to vote on the bill that they passed last year. And you can imagine, even if there were the votes in the Senate to pass the legislation we voted on today, the House would be unlikely to take that up. So, again, this is more of theater and more of a show vote than it is actually trying to solve a real problem.
Over on the other side of the Capitol this afternoon, the House moved a vote to repeal Washington, D.C. law, because Congress has oversight of Washington, the federal city, that allows non-citizens to vote in local elections. Now, Washington, D.C., this isn't the only city that allows that. But what we had was 52 Democrats joined with all Republicans in the House to pass this bill. How concerned are you about election integrity with the November election approaching?
Well, I'm very concerned. We saw after 2020 that there were efforts across the country in the individual states to make sure that the integrity of the vote was protected. We want to make it easy for every legitimate voter to cast their ballot, but conversely, we want to make sure that people who are not authorized to vote can't, because it dilutes the vote of legal voters. But as you point out, we have special jurisdiction over the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., and I think it's the right message, it's the right vote, and hopefully sends a message across the rest of the country that this is about American citizens being able to vote, not just casting the most votes from whatever source, including people who are not legally present in the country.
Now, you're part of the Republican leadership in the Senate. Any chance that the Republicans will be able to force a vote on this in the Senate?
We certainly will try. Senator Schumer, as you know, controls the agenda as the leader, the majority leader, but there are various mechanisms that we can use, including calling up the bill under a unanimous consent. I think it's pretty sure that Senator Schumer and others will object, but I think it also raises the visibility of the issue, but it also puts the responsibility squarely where it belongs with Democrats to block this common sense piece of legislation.
You know, I don't know if you agree with me or not, but I think allowing non-citizens to vote is un-American. I mean,
absolutely.
What we're doing is we are undermining what this country stands for. Now, if they want to become citizens and they go through the process, I welcome. That's great. But this is undermining our republic, our institutions in which we have confidence and trust by allowing non-citizens to vote. I can't imagine any other country allowing people to come in and manipulate the system as we're allowing to occur.
Well, Tony, let me give you one additional reason to be concerned. Senator Hawley from Tennessee introduced an amendment which said that you could not count non-citizens for purpose of the Electoral College or for purposes of drawing congressional districts. Right now, that's not the case. And every single Democrat in the Senate voted against that. So I think there's a very clear trend here, letting people in without any restrictions across the border, letting non-citizens vote, and then letting those non-citizens form the basis of drawing congressional districts and the Electoral College. It's a pretty consistent trend, and it's not a good one.
So what do you think is the primary motivating factor for the Democrats just to basically ignore the rule of law and allow people to flood this country and then vote? Is this their blitz to try to take over the country with illegal votes?
I don't know if there's any other conclusion to be drawn. I've been reluctant to sort of say, well, that's what they're doing, but I don't know of any other explanation for what they're doing, flooding illegal immigrants into the country, allowing them to vote, and then using those non-citizens for purposes of drawing congressional lines in the Electoral College. I don't know any other explanation other than it's a quest for power, political power. What they're finding, though, is even among Hispanics, for example, in Texas and elsewhere, as many of them are as chagrined and concerned about the massive illegal immigration across the borders that they are now tending to vote more Republican because of the consequences. So yeah. I don't think it's working, right. But that doesn't mean that it's not dangerous.
Yeah, I agree. I do think it potentially could backfire because we're looking at not only are they more conservative voters, they're also more faith-driven voters.
Absolutely.
Is what we have found, which leads to them voting conservative. Senator John Cornyn, we just got a couple minutes left. I want to switch gears, if I can, in the last couple of minutes we have together, because you're a former judge, maybe I could say a recovering judge. And I want to get your thoughts on what's been unfolding in New York City with former President Donald Trump.
Well, I'm deeply troubled, Tony. You know, there's certain basic institutions in our country that should be beyond politics. And I think the judiciary and our justice system are those institutions. We've seen the erosion of public confidence in the FBI and the Department of Justice at the federal level. But to have it what is blatantly a political prosecution of the Republican nominee for president of the United States during the campaign for presidency is, I think, outrageous, and also further undermines people's confidence in that what's supposed to be a non-political, non-partisan institution. But then when you dig down and you look at the very allegations here, none of this should have gone to trial because all of this would either be barred by the statute of limitations and the prosecutor can't tie this to any sort of federal criminal offense. So I hope the judge does the right thing and dismisses this case ultimately. If not, I hope the jury will acquit the president. But this is very deeply damaging and corrosive to public confidence in what should be one of the basic institutions in our society.
Yeah, I agree. It's very, very, very disturbing when we lose that confidence. Our system only works in that way. But it just seems like there's this cascading of events like this. In fact, it's unprecedented how many times we're using unprecedented, because it seems like every day there's something new, a new attack on our republic and the underlying foundation, which makes it work. Senator John Cornyn, always great to see you. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Thanks, Tony. Great to be with you. Appreciate it.
All right. Senator John Cornyn of Texas. It really is. I mean, we're in a new day, a new era, where the very foundations of our country are constantly under attack. We've got to defend them. The best way to defend them is by using them. So we need to continue to pray, vote, and stand. All right, folks, out of time for today, but I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul. He says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.